Thanks. So who had a terrible time in middle school? In 1998, I was ending middle school and entering high school, leaving eighth grade and going to ninth grade, and it was a bigger year for me, I think, than I realized at the time, not just because I was graduating. There was a lot of things in my life that were kind of coalescing and solidifying themselves. It's not just hobbies that I had, but things I was going to lay into for the rest of my life. When I was in middle school, I'd been in the same class of kids from first through eighth grade. Like they started breaking us up in eighth grade to get us ready for like mixing classes in high school. But I was with the same group of kids for most of my life. So when you're the booger picking kid who doesn't pay attention and draws monsters on his desk and like talks too much, you're that pretty much forever up until eighth grade. So I wasn't really well regarded. You know, I was a dweeb. I liked kids stuff. You know, most of them were talking about Friends, and I was really big into the Muppets and stuff like that. So eighth grade, 1998. 1998 was one of the year that I was in Boy Scouts. Part of the reason I was a dweeb. I was a very skinny and short patrol leader back then. I also, 1998 was the year that I began to do the preliminary planning for my Eagle Scout project, which would be the first service project that I didn't just like participate in or like be in charge of a section of. Like I was plotting it and planning it myself with no small amount of my mother's foot in my back, but you know, a lot of it was on my steam. It was also the first year I started working at the Cub Scout camp that would become my home for like 7 summers. 1998 was when I discovered AV Club in middle school. It's a lot of knowing giggles coming out from several dorks out there. We met on Saturdays in the auditorium and in the projection room, and using very outdated home video equipment, I became the de facto leader of a crew of kids making a sci-fi movie together about alien abduction. I was the oldest one, so I just was in charge. And it was like, you know, we use like forced perspective, like the finger puppets up here next to the camera, and everyone's really far away thinking it's really big, and like radio play era, like sound effects shaking the big board to make it make thunder noises. And what was probably my first puppet, which is a Cabbage Patch doll done up to look like Richard Simmons in like a little baby onesie with puff paint and glitter, and we glued a little wig on him, and he was abducted during a live Sweat Into the Something or Other broadcast with like fishing wire off camera, you know, really high tech. I bring all this up because, like, you know, like I said, I wasn't really well regarded in like my main class that I spent most of my time, but these kids, like, they thought I was a leader in Boy Scouts and AV Club. They saw me as like an authority on stuff. You know, like if they thought I was weird, it was mostly to my benefit because they were weird too. You know, I should also mention quickly that 1998. This is important. 1998 was also the year that I went to my first two rock concerts in the same weekend. I saw like the grand, glorious spectacle of a national touring arena show with fire and stuff. And in the same weekend, I went to my first church basement hardcore matinee. And I think it was really important that I saw both those extremes and how powerful they both are. But especially like how powerful it is, like after going to one, then to see like, oh, you can do this yourself and you can reach out and touch it. You know? And the theme of tonight is making your mark and our influences. And this is where I need to get into Jim Henson. For those of you who know me and who have seen a bro show, you know I do puppets, and puppets are a big part of my life, but they weren't always. But Jim Henson always was. I've always had an admiration for artists and creators who are like storytellers and filmmakers, but when they can create a totally realized fictional world within our own that is totally believable and has its own mythology and canon. Like, I really have a really great admiration for that, especially for Jim, because he was such a multi-talented guy, like an artist, you know, not just as a puppet sculptor, but as a writer and a storyteller, singer, performer, like, and the fact that an interviewer, and he only did this stuff half the time as himself, the other half he was a frog, you know, like there was a point in time where people were line out the door to get a chance to talk to Jim Henson's hand, you know, it's no small feat, but that doesn't make mention of all the people that Jim had around him, all the artists and the creators and dancers, and like he like just drew people like a magnet to him, which I also really admired, because to do all these great productions that he did, where like, you know, where there's creatures as well as humans, like they just took so much work and so many people to get involved with it. And you've ever been to a bro show, you might see where I'm going with this. Jim was also really stubborn. He had a very clear vision of how he saw the world could be, And he was hell-bent on sharing it and, like, proving to the world that it could be that. And it made him really hard to work with, apparently, but it also made really beautiful things like Sesame Street happen. And there's an argument to be said that's also led to how he died. But, oh man, I knew this was going to happen. When we're kids, when we're young, we're faced with this choice of, like, we have to sort of, we're going to meet people in our lives that are just mean, just get off on meanness and, like, telling you that you're stupid and the things you like are stupid and you're stupid for liking them. And, you know, when we're kids, we have this choice. We have to, like, hold on to certain things, you know, cause some stuff shakes out, but other things just get left behind as, like, kid stuff. Whether because we just get out of them or because we decide to leave them behind because they're not popular or well-liked. I think everybody, it happens at a different point in everybody's adolescence. It happened to me in middle school. When you just sort of realize that, like, yeah, there's going to be people who are shitty forever, and it sucks, but that doesn't mean you should let go of the these beautiful things and, like, this belief that the world can be a little sunnier and can be a little better if a lot of people all work together to try to do it. I love community theater. And so when I came back from Baltimore Rock Opera Society's first tour of Grundlehammer, where my weirdo friends and I all piled into vans and cars and brought our beautiful possible vision of a crazy self-contained world with its own extensive mythology and a really bitchin' soundtrack, we brought it out to the masses beyond Baltimore as best we could. And when we came back, I got two tattoos. I got one of the Bros crest on my arm, and I also got a quote from Jim Henson on my chest from The Rainbow Connection, which is Kermit's song about hearing a voice in your head forever that's telling you how things can be and not letting go of it, of seeing a possible distant over the rainbow future and not losing sight of it. And it says, I've heard it too many times to ignore it. And especially lately, trying really hard not to. Thank you.